south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Let's start with this email, and I'll paraphrase and add stupid jokes and comments in as necessary. It says, Dear Johnny, however dear I might be, love the 824 show about learning Spanish. Yep, we moved, lock, stock, and barrel. We're down here 100% now. And we've already survived a whole month. And in looking around and keeping our eyes wide open, we can certainly vouch for the content of your shows. And of course, as for the wife and I, our Spanish sucks, so there are going to be certain instances where things are lost in translation or worse. For example, we needed some round seat cushions for indoor-outdoor iron patio furniture. They do make some really fantastic iron patio furniture, but it's dead hard on your butt. Thus, we needed cushions. We went to an upscale mall, to a local Samaco, which is an Ace Hardware, and to a few of the other department stores and usual suspects too, but to no avail. In fact, my wife Dorothy went into a place and used wild hand gestures you see gringos do once in a while when they're totally frustrated. I get it. So she flailed her arms as she spat out her best version of broken English Spanish and was quickly led to the toilet seat department. Close, but no cigar. Made sense to me, I guess. Indoor, outdoor, toilet seat, round. Kind of fits the profile. Sí, señor. Needless to say, we're still searching. Which brings me to tourist tip number 614. Go ahead and buy pineapples on the street, Johnny. They're fantastic, all right, but don't let the guy shave the skin and make a nice cute little handle out of the stem. Though it was a nice touch and a damn good pineapple, too. But damn poor sanitation move, I must say. Well, being newly arrived gringos and not thinking about it much, I thought it would be safe, and Dorothy thought they were neat looking. Bad move, Johnny. Dirty machete slash knife, dirty hands, etc., etc. Took a few days on the porcelain patio seat for me to truly heal. Then, get this, Johnny, a local took me to a wake for a guy who whacked himself off. I think he means he offed himself. Anyway, that was awful nice, meet the neighbors and all that. We appreciated the invite. You know, local touch, bit of the local culture, why not? Then, the family gave me a glass of runny, kind of rice water. Some kind of drink I'd never seen before. So I stared at it and stared at it, perhaps too long. Finally, my new amigo said, just drink it out of respect. And so as not to be a stuck-up gringo and not to offend, I drank it. Well, that was two more days on the porcelain patio seat. Hope that doesn't become a habit. Still loving the rest of it, though. Signed, B&D. All right, B&D, thanks for that boots in the bathroom report. By the way, that was a couple that came to one of my Expat Insider seminars. I think it was like a year ago now. Excellent, upbeat people to be with, a lot of laughs too. So anyway, why do you think I'm reading this email? That's because no matter how many times I've mentioned it on my show, and it's gotta have been 20 over the past 780-something shows now, if I've said it once, I've said it a million times, if you don't want to routinely have a date with old Montezuma and get his revenge, it's easy. There are just a few measures you have to take to avoid all that. And believe me, no matter how good the food looks or smells on the street, you don't want to eat from some guy's push cart. And you don't want to eat fruit that's been pre-cut for you. You want to do it yourself. And you don't want to drink anyone's homemade pre-mixed concoction out of a smoky, dirty, or cracked glass. Meaning you prepare it yourself or you drink everything from a bottle or can. And it's not enough to just drink out of a bottle or a can. You should carry a paper napkin or two with you at all times. It might not be true up in the first world, but down here in the third world, they've got a lot of uses, believe me. I always have one or two with me, and what I do is, when I have a can or a bottle, I wipe off the top, and I look at the napkin. If it's really grungy, I'll head over to a sink and actually run some water on it and do it again. Though usually once over with a napkin, and it's just fine. Next, I never drink anything that's got ice cubes in it, which could mean if you're at a restaurant with friends or acquaintances, and they see you say, no ice, please, they might think you're a tacaño, a cheapskate, because Ice takes up volume in the glass that's not displaced by whatever liquid you've ordered. Could be club soda, beer, whatever. Yep, it's an old cheapskate backpacker trick, but that's not the use in this case. Hey, you former backpackers and skinflints out there, you know what I'm talking about, especially you teachers. No ice means more soda, lemonade, or beer, right? It's not that I never use ice. I'll use it if I've made it in my own refrigerator. By the way, here's a question for you. You know, all modern, kind of upscale refrigerators, in the States anyway, have water and ice dispensers on the front, right? Well, when's the last time you changed the filter in that water line in your refrigerator? You know, there's a filter in there you're supposed to change. But I digress. Where were we? Oh, yeah. There are situations, for example, with Mr. B's email, where he says he had to be diplomatic and polite and drink from a cup that contained something of unknown origin. So he did it and paid the price. And if you do something like that, you just might pay that price too. Hey, I'm not saying don't sample new things, but it's always at your own risk. Hey, I can't tell you how many times I've been in the exact same situation. Yep, it's true. You do feel kind of awkward leaving mounds of food on the plate and such, especially in poorer families, you know, are just scraping by. And there you are sitting at some shindig, you know, they really can't afford. Of course, the longer you live in Latin America, the more parties and shindigs you'll get invited to across all social classes. That means you'll have all the more chances to have a date with the porcelain goddess. And if you think, just because a Latin person's got dough and a Range Rover in the driveway in the front yard, that the household and kitchen hygiene is any better than a place that's got a dirt floor and a tin roof, well, you're mistaken. Because, as it turns out, anytime you drink the concoctions that have been prepared by the muchacha, the cleaning lady, or even in the case of the dirt floor shack, the lady of the house, you really are taking your chances. Just look at the wealthy people in Latin America who've got cleaning ladies and maids cooking their food for them. Those are the same ladies coming from those dirt floor shacks, and they've got the same habits. Which is why when you hire your cleaning lady or maid, if that's what you're going to do, you have to train them up. Or you'll find they'll use the same dish rag or floor mop to wipe down the kitchen sink as they use to wipe down the toilet. I'm not kidding. I've seen it for myself. In fact, I've had this very same discussion with many a backpacker over the years. In fact, I was in this very nice little hostel a couple of months ago, and I recommend it. It's called the Quetzal Rue in Guatemala City. And, you know, I just don't recommend places based on what people tell me. I have to actually walk in and see them for myself. Anyway, I was sitting in the lobby of that place with probably six or seven backpackers, and the subject of Montezuma's revenge came up and the general unpleasantness of getting sick in a foreign country. Let's face it, there's no place like home when you're going to be sick and you don't want to be sick in a backpacker hostel. But the fact is, if you walk into any backpacker hostel, there's always someone who's sick. It's a genuine surprise if it just happens to be one person who's sick. Normally, there are a couple of people under the weather. Anyway, I was with a bunch of backpackers and I asked, how long have you guys been out on this trip? Because they were all together, it was obvious. And they said, about a month and a half. They'd worked their way down from Mexico, south of the border. I said, oh, a month and a half? Well, raise your hand if you've not had a case of Montezuma's revenge on this trip. And if I recall, it was 2 out of 7 that hadn't been sick yet. And one guy, the know-it-all in the group, there's always one of those, I'm one of those, he said, yeah, that's the price you pay for hanging around in Latin America. And I said, no, that's the price you pay for having backpacker habits in Latin America. Because I'll tell you right now, as for me, and this could change at any time, I have not had Montezuma's revenge, I think, for 10 years now. Well, at least 5 anyway. I'm not really keeping track. And believe me, I don't mind appearing like a tacaño, you know, cheapskate or stuck-up jerk when I'm with people in a house or with a crowd, whatever, by appearing to be just a little too picky when it comes to my eating and drinking habits. There are certain things I just won't eat because of the way they're prepared and certain things I won't drink. No big explanations required, and I'm not going to give excuses. And of course, I'm as diplomatic as I can be about it. I don't want to insult anyone by saying, sorry, but your food preparation techniques don't meet my standards. Hey, now, that'd be one way to never get invited again, huh? So anyway, bottom line is don't put yourself at risk. Don't get sucked in by being the nice, obliging gringo or gringo because you don't want to insult your host. Really, wouldn't it be 10 times more embarrassing if at the end of the night you ended up sequestered in the bathroom, which just might be the only bathroom in the house? And by the way, Latin bathrooms are chronically short on TP, you know. Oh, and let's not forget the pleasant image of a garbage can full of used TP alongside the toilet. Ew. Oh, and by the way, speaking of the TP in the garbage can alongside the toilet issue, spoke about that a couple of shows ago. We like to revisit that topic once in a while because it's so prevalent and so painfully disgusting and so third world. In fact, every time I talk about that, I get a slew of emails from people who've been down to Latin America and know that disgusting habit all too well. And one guy, Jack, wrote and said, Johnny, you know what I do? Right before I leave the house or hotel, whenever I'm in Latin America, I hit my own John, no offense, Johnny, immediately before I walk out the door so I don't have to use anyone else's potentially disgusting bathroom. At least, he says, doing that buys your own personal plumbing a significant amount of lag time. And another guy, Troy, wrote in. He spent some time in Colombia and Peru, and he writes, when you're sitting around with Colombians especially, they're all talking about how they're not third world anymore. They're moving on up. So Troy says, I'm outspoken. I tell people what I think. So when I'm sitting with Colombians and they're telling me how great their country is, I tell them straight out, you'll never move on up to second or first world status as long as you keep putting your TP in the trash can alongside the toilet. In fact, you could say that's the unofficial definition of third world. Because, as Troy says in his email, he lives in Montreal, Canada, he never in his 33 years of life was ever in a home in Canada where they put the TP in the garbage can next to the toilet. Which is a bit surprising because a lot of French people live in Montreal, you know. Speaking of French people, man, I've been all over the world and I just don't see French travelers. Not like Germans and Brits, Canadians, Americans, and now, more than ever, the Chinese. Turns out practically the only time I ever run into French people is at a French restaurant, which I don't partake of too often, or a previous colony of France like Martinique, Guadeloupe, Haiti, even Vietnam. Yeah, Vietnam was once held by the French. And it really seems like French travelers don't like traveling anywhere unless French is spoken. Go figure, huh? So it's true, here in Latin America, you almost never run into French tourists. I never do. Meanwhile, speaking of touchy subjects, were we speaking of touchy subjects? Well, here's one. It's an email. It just came in. It says, hey, Johnny. First, I must say that I'm a total fan of your expat podcast and have been a listener for the past 2 years. I'm in the process of trying to figure out my own plan B for my wife and our three kids. We've been looking at both Costa Rica, Guatemala, and a couple of other places as possible locations. However, there is one problem. I have a misdemeanor on my rap sheet here in the States and I'm a bit confused as to the criminal record requirements in Guatemala and places south of the border. From what I've found, it states you must have no criminal record in the country which you resided in for the last 5 years. I was hoping, however, that meant after 5 years, if something does show up on your record, it doesn't count. But I don't know. Need some clarification here. Your pal, Mr. J. All right, Mr. J, here's the scoop on that. Now, if an FBI report is required, you'll have to give up your fingerprints, you know. And generally, they're known to go back 7 years on that report. And unfortunately, misdemeanors will show up, but not beyond 7 years. So if you got nicked on campus in 1985 for blowing a few joints, it's not going to show up in today's FBI report. So timing on whatever misdemeanors you may have accumulated is all important. But, you know, getting that necessary FBI, police, or county sheriff good conduct report as a prerequisite for getting residency here in Latin America, whether permanent or temporary, you've heard me say over and over again that some Latin countries only require a sheriff's good conduct report. That means you can walk down to your sheriff's department, give them your name and address, and within an hour or two, you'll have that report. No forms to fill out, no fingerprints to be taken, no mailings or couriers back and forth like you have to do with an FBI report. Oh, and by the way, the cool thing about a sheriff's report is that if you've committed some misdemeanor crimes or even more serious crimes in another state, it's likely they won't show up on a sheriff's report in any of the adjacent states. But as you longtime listeners have heard me mention, little by little, Latin countries are standardizing and phasing out the typical sheriff's report in favor of that FBI report, which requires you to have a nice set of fingerprints to send into them. So, for example, if you're going for residency in Panama or Paraguay or Dominican Republic and a lot of others, you will need that FBI report, and it'll cost you $50 or more. Plus, you'll have to go down to your local police station or sheriff's department and have them do the prints for you because it's almost impossible to get a good set yourself if you're not used to doing it. And who is, unless, of course, you've been through a series of mugshots? And in that case, forget about it, because you obviously have a record. But you know, as for everything that supposedly can't be done, there are some dodges, they call them hacks, right, these days? And here's just one example. Suppose you want to get residency in that lovely little country of El Salvador. Yep, there are many places in El Salvador that are spectacular. Not exactly gangbanger central like you've heard on the news. Speaking of gangbangers, it always makes me laugh when I hear about the Salvatruchas and all the other gangs up in the States, usually in California, especially Los Angeles. You know they're always saying they originated in El Salvador, right? Which is not exactly the truth because they originated up in California. Sure, as stated, gang members were born in El Salvador, but the actual gangs themselves originated in California. Say what? How'd that happen? Well, as it turns out, the exodus of illegals from El Salvador to the States started out in the ghettos of San Salvador, the capital city. So you got poor salvadoreños making that dangerous trip to the States. They got no talent, no skills, no money, no education. They end up in scruffy Latin ghettos amongst their own kind in big U.S. cities like Los Angeles. Out of that environment came the gangs. Simply because they find that up in the States, they have no way to make a living. They don't speak English, no skills, so they end up as dishwashers, drywall hangers, or leaf blowers. Or in a nasty-ass gang where they'll never have to learn English and they'll never have to put in an honest day's work in an honest job. But you knew that already, right? Anyway, suppose you wanted to get your temporary or permanent residency in El Salvador. Well, since, as of now anyway, they don't require an FBI report, you can go down to your local sheriff's department where you live in the county you are in the States, pull that report, probably cost you $5 or $10. Then you send that report to your own state capital and get it apostilled. That just means it has a bunch of seal stamps and signatures on it, proving it's you and the real deal and all that. But wait, suppose you pull that report and there's a DUI on there or a misdemeanor. Well, if there's any one of those things on your report, you're screwed. You're not going to be able to qualify for residency in any land country. But wouldn't you know it? There is a hack. There is a backdoor way to get it to work, provided it's just a misdemeanor charge. Of course, if you've got a felony, you're never going to get residency. What I'm saying is all is not lost if you have a misdemeanor or a DUI. Let me assure you, there is a workaround. There is a hack. There's a backdoor way to put you right back on track, but I'm not going to tell you on the air. Let's just say it's one of those little backdoor kind of things we don't want publicized all over the internet because then they'll slam the door shut in a hurry. I know what you're thinking. Is it legal or not, Johnny? Who do you got to bribe? Who do you got to pay? How about nobody? That's what's so cool about it. But is it legal? Well, it's legal enough. So what's that mean? And you know, when you first hear about it, you think, can that be done, really? Sorry to tease you like that, but it's something I just had to mention. Do know that this little backdoor method will not work for Latin country residencies where they require an FBI report. It only works for Latin country residencies that accept sheriff's reports, and only when you've got a few stains on that report. And for more info on that, I guess you have to come to one of my expat insider seminars, or find out your own way. Which brings us to the wild and crazy topic of chicken buses. Now, you have to know, not all chicken buses are created equal. Kind of a generic term for any beat-up old jalopy of a bus that once served U.S. school children well and now is no longer roadworthy up there. Most often they're retired for mechanical reasons. And where did they end up? Well, down here in Latin America. Yep, Latin America is the graveyard of retired American school buses, but they get a new lease on life as chicken buses once they get down. And though up in the States, while in service, school buses are generally quite pampered. Mechanically perfect because, well, kids are in them, right? So they have to be for insurance purposes, and they always stay well below the speed limits. But all things change once they're shipped down here to Latin America. It's as if they've entered the demolition derby. The drivers are reckless. They've always got the pedal to the metal. They pass anytime they feel like it, even on curves, especially on curves. Oh, and by the way, if you think chicken buses are public transportation, well, they're kind of quasi-public transportation because almost all of them are owned by private lines or private individuals contracted out by the corrupt state, usually to brothers and brother-in-laws and family members of the corrupt Congress handing out those contracts. So as it turns out here in Latin America, about 80% of the people take buses, so there are thousands of routes that are doled out in sweetheart deals and no-bid contracts, most of them, probably all of them, going to relatives and cronies of congressmen. Though they keep their names off the paperwork. That's the way it's done down here. So when there is a crash and people die, and that happens all the time, can never be directly linked back to the congressman owner or the congressman who's getting the kickbacks. There's no way he personally can ever be sued. That's life here in Latin America. That's just the way it is. Oh, and when I said all chicken buses are not created equal, that's because there are chicken buses that run just city routes, and then there are chicken buses that run long-distance routes. In either case, they're just not recommended transportation for gringos or expats, even though gringos should know better. I still see when I pull up to a chicken bus on the street and peer into the windows, an occasional idiot gringo backpacker in there. Sometimes a couple of them. Sometimes kumbayaing with guitar in hand, just singing folk songs and having a good old time. But like I said, anytime you ride a chicken bus, you're rolling the dice. What with the petty theft, groping of women, pickpocketing, and the occasional horrific crash, unless you're into living dangerously, I wouldn't recommend it. Need more proof? How about this article that came out just a day or two ago? It says 11 die and 37 injured when bus crashes south of Cuenca. It starts out, in the third deadly Ecuadorian bus accident in 3 weeks, a bus carrying pilgrims to the shrine of the Virgin of Sisnin overturned south of Cuenca early Saturday morning, killing 11 and injuring 37. According to a survivor, the bus was passing another vehicle on a curve at a very high rate of speed when the driver lost control. Man, it's me, Johnny, again. I'll tell you, I see that every time I'm driving down the road, especially out in the countryside. It's routine for chicken buses to pass on blind curves. Like I said, it's demolition derby. All right, that was crash number one. Crash number two, on August 12th, a bus carrying the Guayaquil football fans home from Cuenca crashed in the Cajas Mountains, killing 12. Then on August 14, a Colombian bus loaded with illegal drugs overturned east of Quito, killing 24. So you got three deadly crashes, all in Ecuador, in the span of 3 weeks. Which begs the question, if a bus in the States or Canada flipped and killed, let's say, 12 people, it would be huge news and a national day of mourning. They'd be interviewing the parents. There would be midnight candle vigils. Because that kind of stuff only happens up in the first world, maybe once a year. But here in Latin America, a weekly occurrence. And how about this? The article ends with the usual conclusion. It says, the driver survived the crash and left the scene of the accident not to be heard from again. All right, meet Johnny again. Man, that is so typical. You read about that in Latin newspapers all the time. There's a big crash. People are dead. And the driver, who's usually been drinking, is long gone. Which begs the question, why is it almost always the driver survives? Well, it could have to do with the stories you hear about people who get in crashes when they're really drunk. They're so limber and flexible, like a dish rag on impact, they often come through without a scratch. Oh, and finally, the article says, among the initial findings by transportation officials, surprise, surprise, the bus was carrying more passengers than legally allowed. The bus had a legal limit sign of 42 passengers, but police said there were 48 or more on the bus at the time of the accident. So my question to all you gringos, expats, and expat wannabes is, do you still want to ride a chicken bus? Which brings me to another hot topic I recently discussed. Gringos ripping off gringos here in Latin America. Or at least gringos making promises they can't fulfill. Two other clueless gringos. Listen to this article. Just came out. And man, this is exactly what happens to so many gringos and expats, especially on the tourist trail, like Costa Rica, Panama, and, of course, Ecuador. And the premise is, oh, let's not trust the locals. I've heard so many stories about getting ripped off. Let's go to the gringos for advice. I should talk, huh? You're getting advice from me. Anyway, listen to this. A decade ago, it was promoted as the largest beachfront development of its kind in Ecuador. The videos, the websites, the brochures, proudly proclaiming it was a project being developed by Canadians, built to Canadian planning, Canadian construction techniques, and ecological standards. Yes, the project called Mirador San Jose was a tropical paradise, truly. It was advertised heavily in Canada, particularly in Quebec, home of many of the project's investors, and attracted hundreds of buyers. But today, 10 years after, it's a completely different story. Dozens of homeowners are battling the developers, some in court, claiming poor planning and deficient infrastructure to the point that many homes are cracked and are sinking, even falling apart. Others complain of open ditches where gray household runoff water stagnantly stands and just stinks. Worse yet, of the 225 houses built in the development, 29 have collapsed, while dozens are showing large foundation settlement cracks. The builder of 14 of those destroyed or damaged homes, Yves Cormier, blames the problem on the project developers, not the construction techniques. He says the 29 houses were built by 7 different builders who worked with different engineers and architects. He says most of the damage is the result of poor planning. In fact, there is an open trench between houses that just collects gray water and has softened the ground, weakening it. In addition, each has a septic tank or biodigester, and the lots, he says, are simply too small to handle all the outflow of gray water and sewage. And then he says the developer's original plan to shoehorn 1,700 lots on 109 acres was a bad idea. And then we have one of the owners demanding a solution. His name is San Leon from Montreal. He says he was looking forward to retirement in his native Ecuador, where he was actually born, until 2016, when he noticed his home was sinking. It has subsided 10 inches into the sand. He's been demanding the builder slash developer fix it, but has received only promises. Then it says some Mirador owners have actually paid for engineering studies after the fact that point to project infrastructure deficiencies, and they've also posted videos showing cracking houses and standing water. Other tenants are seeking legal remedies, which will force developers to fix some of the problems. Whether or not it brings back homeowners who have given up and abandoned their properties remains to be seen. Finally, it says, Stephanie Rauler, a Quebecer who lives permanently in the project, says one solution would be to build a sewer system connected to a water treatment plant for all. This would solve many of the problems, she said, but the developer just doesn't seem interested, even though this was recommended by the engineering studies after the fact. So there you have it, everyone. The perfect example why you really have to get boots on the ground, talk to people, and don't be fooled by fancy brochures, leaflets, websites, testimonials, and free milk and cookie presentations given by gringos and expats in high-end hotels. Yeah, folks, here in Latin America, especially on the tourist trail, there's an undercurrent of gringos ripping off gringos and or making promises on which they just cannot or will not deliver. And you know, when you think about it, it's got a lot to do with the fact that it's not a litigious society. People don't sue down here. It just takes too long and is a pain in the ass, which tends to bring out the worst in a lot of people, who normally just might stay on the straight and narrow, but knowing they can get away with something and not get sued, well, that's another story. Now, it's not that you can't sue. There are lawyers down here, but it takes years and countless postponements to get anything through a Latin court. So it is a double-edged sword, but as for me, I prefer it that way. Not only that, I've heard some people's definition of paradise is a world without lawyers. You've been listening to the Expat Files Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, you can schedule a one-on-one phone call with me. But first, download my free Plan B questionnaire at www.thenewexpat.com. Better yet, if you want to get your Plan B going from right up there in the States, just sign up for my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. Get the perfect Plan B blueprint by going to theexpatfiles.com/academy.